One of Washington's best-known figures is the affable ex-senator from Washington State, Harry P. Kane, now a member of the little-known but very important Subversive Activities Control Board. We invited Senator Kane over for an informal coffee break. Tell me, Senator Kane, you're now with the Subversive Activities Control Board, one of the members of this, I think, little-publicized board. How come that you get almost no headlines? You don't hear about the work that the Subversive Activities Control Board does.
Well, Holly, there are several reasons for that. In the first place, the board was established by virtue of the Internal Security Act of 1950, and therefore has not been in existence very long. And secondly, that board is endeavoring a tremendous experiment. It pursues an effort, really, to get at the truth about the communist conspiracy in these United States of ours, while at the same time extending due process in the fullest possible measure to every person or group which appears before us. In that effort to discover the truth, we necessarily wish to be as non-controversial as is humanly possible, and we let and hope that the results achieved by the board will speak fully and freely for themselves, but that comes subsequent, some time off, after we have actually issued a final order of the board. Those are the basic reasons, I think, why we are content and pleased, in fact, to work quietly in a vacuum. If out of that vacuum, we can tell people generally what the truth about the conspiracy is and how we can break its back before that conspiracy breaks all of us.
Well, Senator Kane, you sort of stepped from a goldfish bowl to a vacuum. You were the senator from Washington and in public life for a good many years, and I guess anybody in that position is sort of in a goldfish bowl, not very much privacy. Now, do you have sufficient privacy, or do you find it too much?
No. No man alive, I suppose, ever enjoyed being in the Senate more than did I. But at the same time, I could hardly enjoy or benefit more from the work we have in hand now. And where the Senate on occasions placed one too brightly under the spotlight of the public scrutiny,
yeah,
the work we're now engaged in sometimes doesn't have the procedures and the work of that board sufficiently in front of the public. I have found it absolutely fascinating to be required to so completely change pace from a job in the Senate where you were expected to speak, for that was the only way in which you could make yourself and your ideas known, to change from that attitude of mind and method of procedure to an operation in which our basic job as members of the board is to think and to listen and to ponder over testimony which is given by other people. The best I can say is that I'm privileged to have had both experiences.
Senator Kane, tell me a little bit about your entrance into public life. How does a man go about getting into public life, running for office? How did you?
Well, I suppose every person's experience varies. I'd had no experience in it, except these episodes to which I make reference while I was living abroad.
Mm-hmm.
I was a banker. I was in the trust end of the banking business, and there's something important about that because you take care of the estates of other people and see that what is small today you hope will grow to be something more substantial and more reliable in the future. But in my own city where I lived, it was purely a local question. There was a revolt going on. There was a disposition on the part of a great many people not to like the then administration within the city hall. Most of the people who were the most resentful were youngsters, approximately of my age, at that time in the late 20s and the early 30s by way of age.
Mm-hmm.
I can't now tell you how it was that I said, yes, I will try. Why it wasn't somebody else to whom all of these young people turned and said, won't you run for mayor? And if you do, we will help you.
Yeah.
Somehow, that invitation was offered to me. And I still recall, and I haven't thought of these things for years, I still recall going in to see my boss and telling him, and it came as a bolt out of the blue, I hadn't been back from abroad very long, that I had been offered an opportunity to enter public life by running for the mayor of my home city, and I was determined to do it. And he said, young man, this comes as not only a surprise, but something of a shock, because we thought we could rely on you to stay put where you are for quite some time. But a little bit later, there was a meeting between my employers and myself, during which they said, well, we've thought this over. We think it's a fine thing you're going to run for the mayorship, but we don't think it will be too successful, and so we'll extend you a leave of absence, meaning only that you'll be made very welcome when this matter is over and this tempest in the teapot is slowed up. And I do recall saying, well, it's going to be rough enough to enter politics in coming from the banking profession, because bear in mind, this was back in the late 30s when the banking profession was not too generously and charitably well thought of around the country. But I said, I think it would be suicide for it to become known that I was only running on a leave of absence from which I could sensibly retire in the event the people didn't find any merit in my campaign.
That would be good propaganda for your opponent, wouldn't it?
Well, it would indeed. But I was very proud of having been in the banking profession, which has much to be said for it. But to make a long story short, I did resign conclusively from a reasonably promising career. And I listened to the importuning of those with whom I was associated. We ought to try to do certain things in the way of reforms in our city. And in due time, I was elected. But there is a point I would make. I was elected purely by luck. Completely and absolutely by luck. We have a primary in our city in Tacoma. I ran third in a field of five. So I was out. The final election follows the primary election by 2 weeks. With 72 hours to go in the campaign, in the finals, between the two finalists, one of the gentlemen in my presence made what turned out to be his last speech. He made it before a group of businessmen and women and labor people in the city of Tacoma. He concluded his speech, which took about 30 minutes. He said, I thank you. He sat down in his chair and never spoke another word. His heart stopped simultaneously with his sitting in that chair. An effort was then made to take who had been third, myself,
sure,
and make me second. You ought to have a contest, my proponent said, as they went to the Superior Court. The decision could have gone one way as well as another. And 72 hours later, the people who had voted once before, 2 weeks before, a good many of them for me, many more of them against me, turned right around and elected me overwhelmingly to my first political office.
Politics is a strange business.
Oh, it varies all over the country.
Mm-hmm. Well, then, to the Senate, and then in 52, out of the Senate. And was it 50?
No, I was defeated in a very interesting contest. In November, like there is to be a November now, only several weeks ahead, in 1952, I entered the Senate in late 1946. I spent 6 years there and left it in the first week in January in 1953.
Well, tell us a little bit about the Subversive Activities Control Board, Senator Kaine, as much as you can, at least. Do you have investigators constantly at work undercover, unearthing the communist conspiracy? How does it work?
Fortunately, no. In the briefest possible way and the simplest fashion, too, the Internal Security Act of 1950 charged the Subversive Activities Control Board with a responsibility for determining, A, are there communist action organizations at work in this country? A communist action organization is one which is dominated, controlled, and directed by a foreign power. And B, do there exist in this country communist front organizations which are dominated, controlled, and directed by a communist action organization in this country? It took that Subversive Control Board, and before I, for example, joined it as a member, some 15 months of hearings and examination and thought to render their own decision that the Communist Party USA was, in fact, a communist action organization. Now, most fortunately, Holly, the Subversive Control Board is a quasi-judicial body which has and ought to have no investigative function of its own. You don't want an organization in such a serious matter to be the judge and the jury and prosecutor all rolled up into one. We operate as an agency before which the Attorney General of the United States appears as a prosecutor, and the organization alleged against appears to protect itself and to defend itself against those charges. We therefore sit as judges and adjudicate the evidence which is presented first to us by the Attorney General in the presence of the respondent, and then the evidence which is presented to us by the respondent in the presence of the Department of Justice or the Attorney General. It is therefore incumbent on the Attorney General not just to think that an organization is subversive, but to so prepare him through, say, the Federal Bureau of Investigation as to be able to establish as being true before our board that his allegations have validity in them.
In other words, can he make it stick?
Yes, that is up to him. Now, awfully importantly, Holly, disinterested as we may be on this board, and we are both Democrats and Republicans and are working pretty hard at this job to find out the truth. However objective we may be, however capable we may be, we, like other people, have our own drawbacks and our own limitations. We may make serious mistakes that involve the reputations of people in the tens of thousands as the very best hedge against the mistakes that we might unintentionally make is the fact that our final orders are automatically appealable by the Attorney General or by the respondent organization, first to the District Court of Appeals and from there direct to the Supreme Court of the United States, which is to say that if our board reaches an order and declares that the Communist Party is in fact a part of an international conspiracy, and if that judgment of ours is approved and endorsed and supported by first the Court of Appeals and then by the Supreme Court of the United States, I think the vast majority of Americans can from that minute on assume and believe that we have found the truth and only place the finger of blame on those who are guilty.
Well, that's very heartening to hear that. I didn't know that, frankly, about the Subversive Activities Control Board. I don't think a number of people did, and I'm glad to hear that you're operating completely, not necessarily within the law, but you're giving everybody all due process.
We are indeed.
Yeah. Well, to get off the very weighty subject of communism and to conclude with a very attractive subject to me, Senator, how's your golf game?
It is some 12 strokes on the average per round, Holly. Better than it was during those six fascinating years I spent in the Senate. That isn't to say that I wouldn't be perfectly willing to give up a few of those strokes per round and still be a member of the Senate of the United States. But the fact is, I'm not in the Senate. I am doing something else which permits me a little fuller opportunity and more occasions on which I can free my mind of the work that is involved and go out at Burning Tree and just bat that ball around to my utter delight.
Uh-huh. That's the President's Golf Club, isn't it? Burning Tree?
I seek not to be disrespectful, for I am full of respect for the President of the United States. That is not the President's Golf Club.
He's a member.
That is a club of which the President, like your guest and like lots of others, Democrats and Republicans and independents, are likewise members. We who are members are considered by the President when he comes as a golfer to be members, as he is a member in our eyes. Oh, it's a terrific thing, Holly, that there is an organization like that within Washington, D.C., to which the President of the United States can, for at least a few short hours, and I wish more often every week, can lay aside the burdens of that monumental office and go out there and just bat that ball around and feel as frustrated and upset and excited when he holds an 18-inch putt as do all the rest of us.
Well, I think that's a good note on which to end our coffee break, and I want to thank you, Senator Kaine, for taking time off from a busy day, a day in which you certainly haven't had time to hit a single golf ball, to drop by our studios, share a cup of coffee with us, and just chat.
It's nice to have been in your company, and I hope we meet again.
Senator Harry P. Kane of Washington, member of the Subversive Activities Control Board. That was a visit I had earlier this week with Senator Harry P. Kane, member of the Subversive Activities Control Board. And this is Holly Wright transcribing from Washington, D.C. Next week, I'll have some more prominent Washington personalities before our NBC microphones. I'd like to have you join us then as we listen to Washington.
Every year in this country, $700 million worth of property goes up in smoke. 4,600 fires a day, one every 20 seconds, kill 11,000 persons during the course of the year. Many of those thousands are severely burned or disfigured for life. Pretty tragic, isn't it? But the real tragedy lies in the fact that 90% of those fires can be prevented, because that many are caused by pure carelessness, by people who smoke in bed or discard cigarettes in wastebaskets. They're caused by matches in the hands of children, by overloaded electrical circuits and worn-out light cords, by accumulated debris in the attic, the basement, and in closets, and by persons who use inflammable cleaning fluids. If you've been guilty of these fire safety infractions, you've been gambling with fire, which isn't at all wise, because the odds are against you and the stakes are too high. Next week at this time, Holly Wright takes you behind the doors of official Washington and brings you face to face with the personalities in the nation's capital who are making news all over the country. Be sure to have your radio tuned to your favorite NBC station when Holly Wright invites you to Listen to Washington. Listen to Washington is an NBC Radio Network production and came to you tonight from the NBC studios in the Sheraton Park Hotel in Washington. This is the NBC Radio Network.